Welcome to the Fundraising Talent Podcast. I'm Kyla Daw, and I'm glad you decided to join us on today's episode of the show that is shaping how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent. Rather than advice from experts, our listeners want to hear the insights and ideas from those who, just like them, are on the front lines every day, building meaningful relationships that translate into meaningful support for causes that they and their donors care about. Every week, we invite our guests to have a real conversation about what it means to be a fundraising professional. We're after a greater understanding of what it means to be one of the sector's critically important yet least understood roles, while giving honest answers to our profession's most difficult questions. Thank you for joining us in this episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Here's your host, author, fundraiser, and master trainer, Jason Lewis.
Hi, podcast listeners. My name is Jason Lewis, and I am your host for the Fundraising Talent Podcast. I want to thank you for joining us today for the show that is shaping the way that the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent. This episode is brought to you by OneCause, leader in online, mobile, and virtual fundraising software. OneCause supports over 6,000 nonprofits to reach more and raise more with innovative solutions. You can visit their virtual fundraising resource center at www.onecause.com. Martha, I'm delighted that you are our guest. We've also got Teresa co-hosting with us. Teresa is a member of the Responsive Fundraising Consulting team. Martha, before we dive into our topic of the day, why don't you introduce yourself?
Sure. Well, thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here. I'm Martha Robinson, Director of Development at the Boston Youth Symphony Orchestras, right here in Boston. And BYSO is a really incredible arts education organization here in Boston with a mission that excellence in music can really provide a pathway towards personal success for kids of all ages. And we are proud that we have over 500 kids from all over New England. Kids come from far and wide to be a part of the organization, which I think is a real testament to the level of musicianship, the quality of the organization, and the real commitment to our kids that we have. And, you know, as an organization, we're lucky to be here in the city of Boston that really values education and also values music. So it's provided a great opportunity for us from a philanthropy perspective to really think within the organization, but also outside the organization as we think about growing our donor base and our visibility, which has really been a key element to what we've been trying to do over the past decade. There's been extensive growth in the organization, both in the number of the kids and our programming and the way we think about accessibility and inclusion. And for me, it's meant a lot of growth in our development office as well, which is exciting as a professional. It's why I've been here for going on 14 years. It's a new place every couple of months, it feels, in the best possible way, both, like I said, organizationally, but also as we've really, really grown the fundraising and our visibility here in the community.
Yeah. So you've also I think every organization on the planet has essentially become a new organization in the last 3 or 4 weeks. What does that look like for you all? The transition into social distancing and lots of Zoom meetings. I think I've had like 5 or 6 of them this morning. We're only like halfway through the day and I've already had like 6 Zoom meetings. My head feels like I think there's going to be a new term called Zoom headaches or something. So.
It's quite possible. I've been reading articles about eye strain and how to you know, try to mitigate that. Yeah, you know, like everyone else, it's been an insane challenge. You know, anxiety is high, and then there's also just sort of the tactical workability of what we have to do. Programmatically, obviously we're shut down. You know, our kids are normally, we have 500 kids every Sunday in our building, and we now have 500 kids on Zoom. And so our lessons have been able to continue virtually, and our rehearsals, which is really the core of what we do, is ensembles and orchestras. We have 7 orchestras, kids ages 4 to 18. They're still gathering virtually during regular times and trying to connect and make music together. And it has its challenges. But if anything, you know, this past Sunday, we had perfect attendance in our top orchestra, which we have not had all year. So I think that is a testament to, you know, the kids want to be together. They want to be making music. And I think that's a great story for us to tell. So our challenge in our fundraising office is just, you know, like everyone else, how can we maintain our relationships with our donors? And how can we tell these great stories that are still there? You know, this impact is still very strong. And how do we communicate that? And that's been sort of the topic for the past couple of weeks. I know one of the things we'll talk a little bit about today was, you know, the switch to, we had our annual gala scheduled for May 14th. And on March 14th. And on March 11th, we decided to make it a virtual event. And so that was a huge transition as well. And I know we can talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, before we do that, Teresa, I don't think you've been officially introduced to a lot of our listeners. Why don't you do that? And then I'm going to let the two of you sort of take over the conversation from here.
Sure. Well, my name is Teresa Lee, and I'm a senior consultant with Responsive Fundraising. And prior to that, had my own consulting business, which I still have, merged in with Responsive. And prior to that, I had a 25-year career in higher education in Boston, 15 of those years at MIT, but also several other colleges and universities in the area.
Yeah, thank you, Teresa. So yeah, Martha, let's unpack that, because there is a lot of organizations that have sort of made this really quick shift to virtual events. But before we hit the record button, we have been talking about sort of what really makes those things successful. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like you've learned some important lessons, but maybe not so much learned some important lessons, but just maybe being reminded of what really makes fundraising work.
Yeah, sure. You know, so I think, you know, as you mentioned before we hit record, we were talking that one of the things that I think is special about BYSO is our relationships with our donors is really, really strong. And I know that's what every fundraiser, you know, really hopes for. We're a small-ish organization. I know that's relative. We're about a $4 million organization for reference, and we fundraise a little more than half of that each year. You know, the kids in our program most often come to us when they're 4, 5, and 6 years old, and they stay with us until they graduate from high school. So the kids are here for a long time. We have many, many years to build relationships with them, to build relationships with their families. And subsequently, you know, when we're thinking about a quote unquote alumni program, I think ours is interesting because we aren't just looking at alumni as an opportunity to fundraise and to tell our story because our kids are going out into the world to do incredible things, which they are. You know, it's an opportunity because we know them. I've literally known them since they were in kindergarten. And, you know, this opportunity to build those relationships while they're here, but then really continue them in deep and meaningful ways, I think has really set us up well in this time of transition when we really can't see each other as much. So, you know, one of the things that we've really done as an organization, when I got here, this organization was strong and it was growing, really starting to think about our board in a new way. It was typically made up of parents and alumni, and we were starting to think more about community members because the impact of the work that is being done here is really valued and appreciated here in this city, not just by people who are involved in the program, but people who care about the future of classical music, people who care about children in Boston and having them having opportunities and pathways to excellence. So we did a lot of work to really sort of grow the visibility of the organization outside of just our immediate community. And we also really started to think about what kind of systems we could put in place to make sure that those relationships were longstanding with the people that were in our community, with our parents, with our alumni, with people who were coming to concerts year after year, and with people who, like I said, really cared about our mission, even though they weren't directly involved. And, you know, I think that part of the reason we were able to do that is because of the longevity of people like myself and our executive director, who's been here more than 20 years. Our music director is celebrating 20 years this year. So those relationships naturally have had a long life cycle. What I've been excited that we've been able to do in more recent years is really kind of build up this idea of a major gift program in a way that as a small-ish grassroots organization, we hadn't really done. We'd been doing a lot of, you know, a lot of big direct mail pieces and a lot of things that were, you know, reaching out to the many, and getting low-level gifts. But we felt we needed to, you know, as the organization was growing, we really needed to shore up our giving in a new way. And we needed to think about philanthropy for the organization in a new way. We really needed to kind of change the culture of philanthropy here. We were fortunate, and we are fortunate, that we have a lot of families who have capacity. Most of our families are well, I shouldn't say most of our families, many of our families are below the poverty line. And so they don't necessarily have capacity to make high level gifts, but some do. And we're also fortunate that we have a board and people that care about us who do have the capacity to really help us. So we started to really build up this major gift program with the people who were closest to us. There was a remarkable number of people who'd been giving us gifts of maybe $1,000 to $10,000 for years and years and years and years. And these were people who had wings named after them at hospitals and museums in town, had the capacity to do so much more. And they cared so much about BYSO. So we had this challenge of how do we get those people to think about us in this larger way? How do we get that $10,000 gift, which is amazing and has been helping us move forward? How do we turn that into a $100,000 gift? How do we really get these people who are devoted to us, who've been making gifts for many, many years, to think about us in a new way? And that's sort of an example of what we tried to do really organizationally. We tried to do it with our board. We tried to do it with our community. We made some investments. We grew our staff when I was here, back in the 2007 when I arrived, it was just me. And now we're a team of five. We've really just grown in our capacity to build these relationships. And I think what's exciting is that the relationships that we have, both my executive director, our music director, and myself, are growing deeper and deeper and deeper in terms of those gifts are getting larger. Their relationship to us is getting stronger, but we have had that relationship for a long time. And I think that that is what, I don't know if it completely sets us apart. I'm sure there's other organizations like us, but I think that it is what has set us up well for this really scary time, is that we have great relationships with our donors. We need more of them, and we're working really, really hard to get more alumni donors and to really, build our programs in a lot of different ways. But when it came time for us to kind of make the move to switch from an in-person gala to a virtual gala, we were fortunate that we were able to reach out to a lot of those people who we knew were coming and that we had good relationships with and say, this is what we're going to do. And we really need your help. We need you to give. We need you to help spread the word that we're going to be doing this. We needed you to try to get as many people engaged as possible. And we're going to try to make it fun. We're going to try to make it great. And happy to answer any questions about how we did that. But the key was that we had allies. We had donors who were ready to help us move this particular initiative forward. And our fingers are crossed that as we move into, future months of having to do things virtually, that they'll still stick by us because they care about BYSO. They've been around for a long time. They know the value of this organization. And they can see a way that they can help because they saw it. They saw it happen with our virtual gala. And I'm happy to talk a little bit more about the specifics of the virtual gala if you think that would be helpful.
Yeah, Teresa, unpack that. Let's make her unravel it all.
Okay. So, Martha, I know a little bit about your organization, of course, having the pleasure of getting to know you and your team over these last few months. And I know how hard you were working on the in-person gala and how you had to make a decision, I think with 3 days notice, to not cancel the gala, but to change how you were delivering it. Mm-hmm. And that took work in and of itself. And I mm-hmm. know you had success with it. And the outsider might think on the surface, like, tell us how you did that in terms of your technology or your content or that kind of thing. But one of the things that you talked about was the fact that you have these relationships, you have these network of folks who follow you and love your mission. Go into a little bit more specifics about how you activated your network and actually how you did deliver a virtual gala
sure.
to your audience and who else that included as a result of it being virtual.
Sure, sure. So I'll take it back to the first part of your question, which was the decision, which was, it was interesting. Like if we can all journey back to 3 weeks ago, 3.5 weeks ago, which was like 25 years ago.
It does. It seems like, when was that? I don't even know the date.
Oh my gosh, it's so crazy. And it was sort of like that moment, at least here in Boston, and I know it's different for, it evolved a little differently in every city. where things weren't canceled yet. So, you know, like events that had thousands of people were starting to be canceled. Universities were starting to cancel events with more than a certain number of people, hundreds of people, not 10 people. And so it wasn't an obvious decision. It was something we had been toying with over the course of the, you know, 2 weeks that it really started to unravel. People had started canceling. You know, one of the things that is important to preface is that we had a financial success partly because we canceled this so close to the actual event. All of our sponsorship was in hand. All of that had already been done. So we had already gotten corporate sponsors. We had got personal tables purchased. And I'll talk about how that helped us in a minute. But we were starting to get a lot of those cancellations. You know, people who had bought tables that just said, you know what, I bought this table for my company and I can't ask my employees to come. So please, you know, we're happy to support the organization, keep this money, but we're not going to be able to, you know, to attend. So attendance was starting to drop off. We're starting to ask the questions. And we basically, you know, our board president and vice president, who are hands-on right now. And I think it's maybe worth the mention that we're also in a capital campaign right now. So there's also lots of other things going on. and so our board is really hands-on right now because of this capital campaign. But they don't tend to get really too hands-on with things like the gala. They are engaged. They feel like it's, you know, their it's their event, but they don't, you know, try to plan the party for me. They definitely give me the space I need to move the event forward. But I asked, you know, for us all to get on the phone and have a conversation. And the bottom line was our board president, who is extremely enthusiastic, is, you know, thinks big, is just such a visionary, is so amazing for our organization. We got to the point where we felt like we were going to have to cancel the in-person event. It was starting to become clear that we were going to need to do that. And the question was, do we postpone it or do we try to switch this to a virtual gala? We work with event planners. They said, totally postpone it. We're telling all our clients to postpone right now because things probably will be fine in a month or two. Remember that when we were back in the beginning of March. and we got on this call and we were just like, you know what? We are so ready for this event. Like literally I'm putting the bid numbers on the back of these program books right now. Like we are so ready for this. Let's just do it. Let's just see what we could try to transfer over. And what, you know, what we could do. And so we broke it down to a couple of steps. And I have to tell you, this plan was not perfect. It was in 72 hours that we did this. There was typo in one of our emails, which is so embarrassing, but it totally happened. You know, we had to move really, really quickly. We did a couple of things. First thing we did was we wanted to call all of our sponsors and say, this is what we're thinking about doing. We want to know, you know, if you'll continue to support the organization and if we can count on you to do these specific things. So my team and I picked up the phone, and I want to say that again because I work with some younger people and I know a lot of young people in the field who are like, okay, I'll start sending those emails. And I was like, nope, we need to pick up the phone. We need to phone call all of our sponsors, individuals and corporations, and we need to let them know. And we also need to ask them, obviously, can we keep this support? You know, we need it, and we had sort of our case ready for why the support was going to be, you know, more important now than ever. We also wanted to ask them, will you participate? We're going to make this a virtual day. The event was supposed to be on a Saturday night, and we're going to make this sort of an all-day virtual event. We're going to be pumping out content, and I'll tell you a little more about that in a second. But this is only going to work if we can get people to participate in the way that we were hoping they would in the room, which was bidding on our auction items, raising their paddle to support the organization. And it will only work if we can get all of those people involved. So will you share this content with everyone that you intended to have at your table? Will you share it to everyone who you invited and said they couldn't come? And will you share it with all the people that you didn't even invite, but maybe they could participate? And we had those calls and they amazingly all went very well. Everyone was extremely, generous. And again, I think that's because most all of these people were people who know and love BYSO. You know, they weren't corporate partners who wanted their logo on the golf tournament. They were people who wanted to support the organization. So among others, I heard things like, please don't give this another thought. Absolutely. Absolutely. And then to varying degrees, yes, we will, you know, we will send this out to our people. And I will comment that on the individual side, there was much more enthusiasm on engaging their guests than on the corporate side. And that was to be expected. I think a lot of our corporate sponsors bring employees, a lot of them bring clients. And so there was certainly some opportunity lost by not having the in-person event, for sure.
So I've got to jump in here. Teresa knows where I'm going to go with this. But at Responsive, Martha, we teach these three lanes, the first lane, the inner lane, and the innermost lane. And it's essentially a series of decisions that the donors are making on behalf of the organization. And is it fair to say, Martha, that essentially what your organization did with this event is what I would say you moved it into that middle, what I call the middle lane. And that is to say that you essentially had asked them to make a decision on your behalf previously, which was a decision that maybe they had routinely made periodically in the past, but essentially you had them make a more meaningful decision. You asked them to go a little bit more deeper on their commitment to the organization. You said, "Are you with us?" There was a more robust decision-making process. You reached out in possibly even a more meaningful way than maybe you had even initially for some of those sponsorships. I tend to hear what I think I'm hearing, and I suspect, Teresa, you're hearing the same thing, is that you asked them to make a different type of decision than you had previously as it related. So the difference between going from an in-person event to a virtual event is not nearly as critical as asking them to now make more meaningful decisions on our behalf. Am I right?
You are absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And we saw that happen in a way that I didn't totally plan. Again, so much of this was so quick. The decisions were so quick that we didn't intend to get the response that we did, to be perfectly honest. And what was remarkable, you're absolutely right. That is exactly what we did. We said, we are in a state of, I'm not going to say state of emergency, although I do think it's worth saying that our governor declared a state of emergency that day. So our decision was then made for us. So that helped. But we were saying just that. We're saying we have a problem and we have a quick plan. We think that we'll fix it, but it only works if you can help us in this deep way. And it totally ignited people. People who, just as you said, routinely bought a table, dutifully brought great guests that made lovely gifts. We're now like, actually, can you send me that email? I thought of three more people I can send it to. And this amongst, you know, the majority of my board members and these donors are people who are working, and a lot of them in finance. So they are also at a time where they are putting out crazy fires, and yet they were like all in for this. It was really, really special. I think that
So is it fair to say, I mean, you're talking about mental energy. I was just having this conversation this morning with a client. Martha, you're talking about having initially asked them to do X, and then you're saying, can you do X times two? Mm-hmm. So will you commit to us more mental energy in order to not only pull this off at the level that, you know, in order to pull this off at the same level that we originally expected is going to require more of you, not in terms of physical space, but like headspace. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to send, you know, make some more communications on our behalf. It's going to be more deliberate. It's going to be more intentional. There's more psychology going on here than I think some of us are thinking about. It's not just simply turning off, you know, flipping the switch on one initiative and flipping the switch on a different one.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And it really did, whether they knew it at the time that they were committing to this, it did require a lot more mental energy, because normally, you know, they bring their people and we do the work for it. You know, like this event is incredible. Our kids are absolutely incredible. And when you see them and when you hear them, which you do at our physical event, like it's done. Like people are raising their paddle. And what we were saying is, you're going to have to help us tell this story, because we're not going to have this physical event. So we're going to pump out content for you, but exactly, you're going to have to really try to help sell this and to really help engage more people in ways that you haven't had to do it before. And, you know, in speaking it now, those are not the words that were used during those conversations, during those calls, but that's exactly what we were doing. And we were so excited about what happened. Our donors absolutely stepped up. They took this on as like a personal project. And again, I say this was during a time where things were like starting to unravel. And I think that a few things helped. I think that we put some really specific parameters around what we were asking them. So what we had done, and I'll take a couple of steps back just to tell you a couple of logistics. We did have a online platform that we use for our event, because while we do have a silent auction, a live auction, and then a paddle raise, they're all mobile. So even in the room, you're doing it through your phone, or whatever device you have. So we were fortunate that all of our auction was already online, because we do make it live a couple of weeks before the event, which gives people the opportunity to pre-bid. It gives us an opportunity to engage people outside of our guests, to start bidding on things. So that was already set up, which was great. And that platform allowed us to put up video content. I don't know if I can share the name of the company we use, but I will.
Oh, please do, Martha. Yeah, please do.
We used One Cause, and I cannot tell you how amazing they were. I am like happily plugging them, because they totally saved us. They have great capability that I don't think they weren't intending for it to be used this way, but it worked really, really well. So all of the auctions were online. All of the registration was online, which was, again, how it intended to be for an in-person event. But the fact that it allowed us to host video content was really, really great. So what we did was we...
Martha, yeah, let me interrupt you.
Please stop.
You didn't know this. Yeah. You didn't know this.
You have no way of knowing.
You had no idea. One Cause has been our sponsor on this podcast for quite some time now.
No kidding.
So, and I got to say, Martha, I had not asked you, and to our friends at One Cause, I'm commending all of you for helping these folks pull this thing off, but we had no idea.
That's
so
awesome.
Yeah. And I was honestly, I was kind of cringing on the possibility that you were going to mention some other platform, which I'm sure I was sitting there thinking, oh my goodness. And I was going to start texting my friends at One Cause and ask them, you were their client. But anyway, that's wonderful.
That's
I'm
great.
Glad. And Kelly and the team and all of them will be very grateful for your endorsement there. Thank you. Sorry for the interruption.
No, that's great. You know, they were wonderful. This is the first year we used them. We've used other platforms in the past, so we couldn't have been happier. But what was great is, so what this whole thing allowed us to do, though, was also to step outside of the constituents that were intending to come to the event. You know, this now all of a sudden was a free virtual event, so we could invite everybody. So what we did was we created five pieces of video content. One of them was a very highly produced piece that we had already done that was going to be shown at the event. The additional four were straight up iPhone, like edited on my laptop, and I've used iMovie like four times in my life. Videos that were, one was from our music director, who was one of our honorees. The other was our board president, who was the other honoree. The third was a welcome. Actually, it was the first one, but it was the welcome video from our executive director. And then the last one was a video of all of our, not all of many students and parents that we had on a Thursday afternoon asked them to send us something by Friday morning that just, you know, we had given them some talking points. We had a specific story we wanted to tell and to get that content together. And the plan that we, again, put together like on giant easel paper in our conference room was that throughout the day on Saturday, we would push out this content to everyone who had registered for the event through the site. So what that meant was we needed to get as many people registered as possible. The reason that we did that was we do have specific sort of policies within our organization about how much we will email our full lists. And we didn't want to be sending out five emails in one day to all of those people. We were worried that people would unsubscribe and then they wouldn't receive anything from us in the future. So we wanted to make sure that people were really opting in. But it, like I said, gave us the opportunity to get more people to opt in than the original 175 people that were on our guest list. So on Friday, we sent the first sort of content out as like a teaser and said, it was sort of the announcement, our event is going to be virtual. Actually, I take that back. Thursday, we sent an email out to our entire mailing list that just said, the event is not happening in person. It's going to be a virtual event. We took the event logo and literally just like slapped the word virtual over it and, you know, kept the adorable image of the 7-year-old with her little cello on the front. And said, it's going to be virtual, sign up so that you can receive this amazing exclusive content. And it was just a link to get everyone signed up. It wasn't donate now. It wasn't give. It was just join us. Just join us for this amazing, you know, state-of-the-art idea that we've had, which, you know, not that state-of-the-art. But and then on Friday, we started sending out the teasers and asking people again to sign up. So what that meant is that on Saturday, by, you know, end of day Friday or Saturday morning, we had expanded our sort of registration list well beyond that original guest list, because we had pumped it out to all of our families, all of our alumni, you know, ticket buyers, everyone on our list. And we got, you know, a couple hundred people that were not intending to be at our event, which was really, really amazing. And then through that platform, we were able to send text messages, and then we also sent emails out, through our own, you know, email server. And so we kind of, like I said, pumped out that content throughout the day. So at 10 a.m., it was like the welcome video, welcome to the virtual gala. Then we put out each video that was hosted on the site. And under each video was this like gigantic donate now button. And then also in the emails we put things like we were featuring auction items so that people would start to give or start to bid on those items at a higher rate. It was really cool because all of those functions were abled all week, you know, like starting on Thursday when we announced this. And we got a couple of gifts in, and some people started to make some auction bids, but I didn't know what was really going to happen. And I started to get nervous because a lot of people were opening the emails, but people weren't necessarily bidding and they weren't necessarily making gifts. What happened on Saturday was that people were like, quote unquote, like tuned in for our virtual gala, and people started bidding. People started making gifts. There was a thermometer on the page. Truth be told, our goal originally was a $75,000 paddle raise. We just kind of said, let's just go for it and put $100,000 up there because I don't think we're going to do as well with the auctions because we had to make our live auction silent, for example, and we usually do much better in the room for that. And not reaching your thermometer is a bummer, but in this case, it would make sense, you know, and we could then maybe extend it if we needed to. Bottom line was, like, by 10 a.m., we were well over half of where we needed to be. And the gifts started coming in, which was really, really amazing. And then the day sort of closed with a final video, which was the music of our children. Obviously there wasn't a live performance, because everyone was at home, but we, reproduced, an older piece, not, you know, just a couple months old. Actually, I think it was a year old, and shared that with our donors as well. The other really critical thing that we did, and this gets back to this like relationship idea, is that when I reached out to those donors in the beginning and I had said, you know, this is what's going to happen. Can we count on you for support? I asked a few of them if they would consider putting in additional funds as a match for that paddle raise, because we thought it would be, you know, obviously motivational for people. We've seen matches have great success here at BYSO, and I know a lot of others have too. And I spoke to one donor, actually self-selected, and said, I'm a little worried about our gala, and I know this is going to be really hard, and what if I helped put in for a match? And that was really the beginning of a snowball. And I said, obviously, yes, that would be fantastic. We talked about it and I said, would you call, you know, A, B, and C and ask them if they would do it too? And they did. And then they said, you know what, I'm going to call so-and-so and ask them to pitch in too. So in reality, I actually solicited one of what ended up being five gifts. It was those donors reaching out to other folks. They were all board members. I want to mention that. So they were people who were very, you know, close to the organization and dedicated to the organization. But they, between the five of them, put up $50,000, which was amazing. And so what was great is that as gifts were coming in, they were like doubled, because the gifts were being matched, which was really, really exciting. And I'm super happy to say that we raised over $100,000, which was amazing. And our auctions raised, almost as much as we had originally planned, which is insane. And in the end, because we, you know, were spared some expenses because we didn't have the in-person event. Sadly, we were not spared all expenses, but we ended up netting almost $40,000 higher than we had originally budgeted, which was a huge win, obviously, for the organization. It was also this unbelievable collective energy of this like collective victory. On Saturday during the day, while this is all going on, I'm receiving text messages. I'm receiving emails from board members being like, oh my God, look at the thermometer. Like people are so engaged and so excited because they had committed to doing this. You know, people sending me messages saying, hi, Martha, I want to introduce you to so-and-so. I just asked them to participate and they're thrilled to make $1,000 gift. You know, like they were introducing us to new people. They were totally helping us take this ball and run with it. And I think that was all because we had those early conversations and they got excited about it. And just as you said, go ahead.
Martha, everything I'm hearing, I'm sorry, Teresa, I'm totally hijacking
this
interview.
Go for it.
Martha, I have said to people for years, we used to, when I was a major gifts officer in Washington, we used to have the health charity that I worked for would have a large $1 million gala every year, in New York City. And the work, the energy that had to be put into that event in the year preceding that event, to raise that $1 million was an extraordinary effort. I mean, I was traveling to, as a major gifts officer, I was traveling around the country soliciting gifts, you know, basically setting gifts up to be brought to that $1 million event. That was part of my job. What I'm so much hearing is that it's not really about the event at all, that it's so much about getting that, which is what I've said to a lot of, you know, when we're in our trainings and that sort of stuff. It's never about the physical event anyway. It's about getting all that momentum and that enthusiasm and that energy built up and then pointed at a particular initiative or cause or goal or something like that. And whether you're in this physical place or not, really becomes secondary.
Mm-hmm. You know, there were definitely some things lost for us by not having the event, because our event has long time been an opportunity to engage new donors. And while a lot of people, new people came to the table, their experience with us was very different than had they seen our children, had they heard us speaking live, had I been able to meet them personally and shake their hand. And I think that's the challenge ahead of us now is all these new people that made these great gifts. Like, how do we, you know, keep those relationships going? But you're absolutely right. And when I look at who made these gifts, which we've now had a chance to breathe and really do a little more analysis on, a lot of them were new and they were these people who, like I said, it was donors reaching out to new folks, but a lot of them were people who were already in our sphere who weren't necessarily coming to this event. You know, the ticket for this event is $300. Tables are start at $5,000. So there are barriers for people to attend this event. But there were a lot of people that chose to participate. And because those barriers were taken away, they were able to participate and make $50 and $100 gifts, and sometimes even larger. So it was definitely a combination of those things. And I think that speaks to, you know, a lot of those people that gave to this organization, even though it wasn't a physical event, speak to your point that the event itself clearly, you know, wasn't the reason they wanted to support
this organization. So you re-engage donors that would not have otherwise shown up at the event and possibly created an avenue, if you will, for them to become a part of something. You know, that $50, I can totally see that $50 donor who may not or would not, had not planned on coming to your event, but was re-engaged because of the momentum that you guys built up.
Absolutely.
Around this virtual event.
Absolutely. And I think because it was sort of like a, you know, crisis emergency, oh my God, we're doing this. There was also this enthusiasm of like, I want to help. I want to be a part of this. So it wasn't even just, here's my $50. It was like, I got, because the $50 often came with a message that was like, this was so amazing. Thank you for sharing this great content. You know, it was engagement, in a way that I agree. I don't think necessarily would have happened, otherwise. I mean, just looking at who bid on things and who made gifts, and I should have this stat in front of me. It's close to 20% of them were not people who were on our original guest list. So they were people who had no intention of coming to the event. Which is really...
Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it was really great. The other thing I want to mention, because it's really important, is that we do have staff here in our development department. You know, a lot of people I know are one-person shops or what have you. This was a insane amount of work. And part of it was because we did this 3 days before. So we were working our tails off just to like pull off a regular in-person event. And then basically threw it all out the window 3 days before and decided to do an entirely different thing.
Yes.
So three people worked 12 hours a day for 3 days to do this, maybe more. And, you know, on a level that, you know, I pride myself on punctuality and making sure things are ready 2 days before they go out and that 10 people have proofread them. And this was a case of like the email's going out at 2 and we're still pulling the list at 1:45. So, you know, there was a lot of frantic energy around this, which was unfortunate. And if you have a little time to plan, I think that you will do a much better job than we did. And I think a lot of people, you know, a lot of people have asked me for my content and I'm like squeamish to share it because it was not great. You know, it was put together on such a shoestring. That said, I think this also, you know, there's something to be said about the energy that was around this, that was generous and, you know, that people really, really wanted to help. After every gala, you know, any fundraiser will tell you that you get the emails from your favorite donors and board members that the subject is constructive criticism, a little bit of feedback, and sharing all of the things that they would have changed for your event and the things that you should consider next year. And this didn't work and that didn't work. I received literally zero of those this year. I think people were just so like, this is great. Even though, you know, there were a lot of flaws and there were a lot of hiccups because it was so quick. The energy was just, how can we do this? We've got 72 hours. Let's come together. Let's pull it off. Let's figure it out. And let's be a part of it. And what was great is that was clearly, it was staff led, but there was so much more donor engagement than I could have ever anticipated, you know, in making this switch.
Yeah, I've got to make you shift in your seat a little bit and squirm a little bit. Where did you really screw up? Where did you mess up? You've just unpacked the playbook between us at Responsive and our friends at One Cause. We're totally going to transcribe this and turn this into the playbook for virtual events. But and I think they've already written one. We'll make sure to put that in the show notes. But probably with a little help from you all. But yeah, where did you mess up?
No, I think that it was less about messing up and a little more about not being as strategic with our quality as we could have if we'd had more time. I feel good about what I did. Don't get me wrong. You know, given what the circumstances were, I feel good. My team feels good. We're very proud. And I wouldn't redo the fact that my board president was like holding a selfie stick, you know, and that was what, you know, what his video was like. It was adorable. It was great. He had raised a glass of champagne at the end of his video and asked people to get on their phones and bid now. You know, it was great. I wouldn't change that. I think that we were limited in how we could tell this story with the content that we had. And I think that those videos, the first one and the last one could have had a little more impact. We could have told the story a little better had we had more time. I think that if you have time, it's a challenge. You know, those videos were longer than they should have been. They were like 4 minutes. We would have liked them to be 2 minutes. It's really hard to do to try to get that quick content. I did hear from a lot of people that they didn't actually watch them throughout the day. They actually just like later sat down and watched all of them. I mean, I heard from a donor so sweet, was like, I sat down with my family and we rewatched them because it was so wonderful to see and to hear. So I think that it, you know, they were clearly impactful. You know, people enjoyed seeing them. Our messages, the emails that went out, they were fine, but they could have been awesome if we'd had a little more time, you know? And I think that we were really just trying to, you know, beat the deadline and get everything out as quickly as we could. But I wouldn't say I felt like we screwed up. I wished that we'd had 3 weeks. I think that if you have too much time, you'll also like overthink it. So I think that if I'd had like 3 weeks, that would have been the ideal time to make this switch over.
So what I guess this all begs the question, what will you do next year?
Yeah.
because coronavirus hopefully will have come and gone to some extent. Let's all hope for that. Mm-hmm. And you will have the option of putting this back on the calendar, but you have now learned what I'm hearing is a different set of impulses, a different set of skills and habits, or that habits that can be cultivated, which is everything that we're constantly saying to our clients, is that fundraising on the scale and on the magnitude that you guys were just able to pull off in a couple of days is where I think fundraising is going. Mm-hmm. And I think it's changing our notions of this very predictable sort of calendar oriented, place based, mm-hmm. Show up in New York, show up in Boston, wherever it happens to be. It sounds to me like, just that 20%, that additional 20%, re-engagement number that you shared a few moments ago, mm-hmm. about the people who would not have showed up otherwise, I think is pretty profound.
Yeah.
Because you lowered the barrier, to entry,
right,
on this virtual event. I mean, you've totally given me a completely different perspective on where this could go. But to my question, what are you going to do next year?
It's a great one. I think that the answer is I don't know.
None of us do right
my
now.
My gut tells me that we would be foolish not to incorporate this idea somehow. Like I said, I think that we definitely still lost out a little bit on not having the in-person event. So much of what we are doing right now in the early, early phases of this capital campaign is engaging new donors. And there were a lot of them that were slated to come and to actually see, feel, be able to touch our work in a way that just couldn't happen virtually. So I would imagine that a hybrid, or not even a hybrid, doing both to some extent. Not sure what that will look like, but the idea that you can still participate in this with a lower barrier to entry is really, really exciting to us, especially as an organization that works with a lot of families that are really, really close to us. You know, we have, you know, children who would have been performing on the stage whose parents would not have been able to come to this event. And that happens every year. And that is very hard for us to reconcile. And so having the opportunity for folks to engage virtually, you know, our alumni who are all over the world, for example, I think that there's potentially a great way for us to live stream something, to engage in both a virtual and an in-person gala to some degree. I think if I had to predict, that's what was likely to happen. And I have ideas on what that might look like. But I agree that this is a really, really great opportunity that we have right now to kind of explore this new idea. I would caution, you know, a lot of people have been asking us about this because they saw our success, which is great, and been talking a lot about it lately. I get a little concerned when I talk to an organization that I know that has a small list, you know, that doesn't have a particularly large reach or particularly strong relationships. I don't know that this is going to be a success. You know, I've already received, you know, just on lists that I'm on, a bunch of emails of people that are doing this, and like, there are organizations that I'm not particularly engaged in. I'm probably not going to do anything. I think that my advice is, you know, take this time to get as many people on board as you can ahead of time, so that this can be a success. I think that if you don't have at least a room full of people who say, and by people, I mean donors, who say, yes, I will make this commitment and I will help try to find others to participate in the virtual gala, I would be wary about how much success you'll have.
Yeah, I mean, you wrap that up really well. And that's a lot of the message that we're pushing out in front of our clients and prospective clients, is this idea that we've got to engage people in more, with more intentionality. We've got to, the efficiency with which fundraising, I think, has played out over the, say, the last decade, it sort of peaked. Mm. You were not able to, in terms of, if on a, on a, on an efficiency metric, you had to put a lot more energy into pulling this off. Mm-hmm. It sounds like your cost went down, but in terms of mental energy and in terms of time
And even the gut, even that muscle inside of us that like you said, I mean, let's bring it all the way back to about the 30-minute mark where you were describing those telephone calls. That's that organization that you're kind of, when you're sitting there sharing, you're giving them your advice and you're saying, I just don't know if this organization is going to pick up the phone. Mm-hmm. I think that's some of the stuff that organizations have really got to confront is that, there's a lot of pieces to this that, you know, email's just not always going to cut it. And you're going to have to pick up the phone sometimes. You're going to have those donors that care about you on the other side of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
so,
you
know, could I chime in here as I'm listening?
Yeah.
And I know this organization and I've gotten to know Martha. You know, the lessons learned and the underlying factors here are that you had deep and abiding relationships, long relationships to start with. You did muster up a lot of energy, which transferred to these great volunteers who then transferred them out to people who otherwise wouldn't be engaged with you. You also showed yourself to be vulnerable in that you weren't perfect and you didn't let that get in the way. And that is attractive. If you think about what's going on in New York right now, one of the reasons everybody's crushing on Governor Cuomo is because he's being very vulnerable right in this moment. Mm. And that's attractive to people. So you're honest, you're open. And you found new ways to engage a community, a part of your community, and you were thoughtful about that. To bring them in to what otherwise was sort of an exclusive kind of event. So if I were looking at it going forward, how do you recapture that energy? Hopefully there's no virus to be pushing you in that direction. But I would sit down with the people that did respond to you and say, what is it, apart from the crisis that we're currently in, what is it about the call to action that made you say yes? And let's keep doing more of that. And let's expand that out to more people. And we need your help, not just now in a crisis, but going forward to keep this circle widening of the passionate people about who care about the mission of BYSO.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm hearing.
That's great advice too. Yeah.
Martha, how do you get that vulnerability back next year?
Yeah.
I think she nailed it. I mean, Teresa just nailed that. How do you get that vulnerability back?
It's a good question. And it's one of the things that I struggle with when I've been talking about this is that even though it totally sucked that we only had 3 days to do all of this,
yeah,
it's why we got away with it, you know?
It's why it worked.
Yeah, and so if we'd had 3 months and those videos looked like that, that might have been a different, you know, people might have felt a little less that, yeah, we would have been less vulnerable. So I don't know the answer to that question, Jason. It's a good one. And I think exploring and as Teresa suggests, really kind of circling back to some of those people and asking them why they did that can really help us, which is why I'll make the plug for the phone call one more time too, because, the email, the email responses were no problem. Happy to help. The end. The phone calls were like 20-minute conversations and us brainstorming people that they could send this out to and them asking questions and me having a really great, you know, touch point with that donor. It was just totally different. And so, you know, that was an opportunity that I had that honestly, sometimes I don't even get at the physical event because it's so crazy. You know, there's so many people and there's so much going on. I don't even often get that much time with them.
I think that person on the other side of that phone call, I think the other person on the other side of that phone call felt that vulnerability that it required.
Yeah.
Because I think the special event mantra that we've gotten into as a culture, especially thinking about the last, say, 10 years, and certainly the 2 decades that I've been doing this, we've gotten into this rhythm that it can be done so predictably, so efficient, and so at an arm's length where everybody just sort of follows in line. You know, we herd them into a banquet hall and we feed them chicken dinner and we do the show. You know, what they felt, what the person on the other end of your phone call felt was a real sense of urgency. It was real.
Mm-hmm.
It was so real. I mean, everything you've described here today was so real. And I think that's what some of our events have lost. And you were able to take something that was completely virtual, so something totally web-based, and put so much authenticity and realness into it.
Deepened your relationships. And a lot of people right now are struggling with, oh, can we fundraise? You know, who should we be reaching out to right now? And you actually ended up deepening your relationships with your donors, which is just lovely to think about. Good lesson learned.
Martha, if somebody, if somebody's listening to our conversation today and they're saying, I want to reach out to Martha, she's got some crazy ideas on how we can turn this thing around for ourselves. How would you suggest that they do that?
Sure. Well, they can call me. I will give you all my info. You can find me on BYSO's website, which is www.bysoweb.org bysoweb.org. And you'll find all my contact info there. And
that's good. Yeah.
Have you read the book that nonprofit leaders and fundraising professionals alike are calling a must read? In this pocket manifesto for today's fundraising professional, Jason deconstructs why many of us find ourselves working for organizations where we cannot accomplish our goals. These same organizations are notorious for rapid turnover and high donor attrition. To avoid this all too familiar path, Jason offers direction from those who want to be recognized and admired for their work. The war for fundraising talent challenges our ingrained beliefs and assumptions about how effective fundraising really works, and it questions the prevailing wisdom hiring decisions and donor behavior. Published by Gatekeepers Press, The War for Fundraising Talent is now available on Amazon and other major retailers. We want to thank you for listening to today's episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's show and hope you will come back for next week's interview, where we will discuss with those on the front line who are defining what it means to be a fundraising professional. If you'd like to be a guest on the Fundraising Talent Podcast, visit our Facebook page or email Jason at jason@lewisfundraising.com. In your email, be sure to tell us about where you work and why you believe you would be a great addition to the upcoming lineup. Thank you again for joining us today, and we look forward to you being a part of the continuing conversation as we shape how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent.